Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. The history of bluegrass and country music has important roots here in the state of Missouri, from the development of styles of playing, particularly fiddle playing, to radio and television programs that help popularize this music from Missouri throughout the region, the country, and the world. There's a new book out. It's called Fiddler's Dream, Old Time Swing and Bluegrass Fiddling in 20th Century Missouri. It tells the story of how the style developed in our state and tells about some of the great fiddlers from Missouri, including some from right here in mid-Missouri in Boone County. A wonderful musician in his own right, historian Howard Marshall is our guest tonight. He's the author of the book and will tell us about why Missouri's role in this music is important historically. He'll even share a little of the music with us tonight. Howard Marshall, our guest, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. All right, it's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Howard White Marshall is our guest. He is the author of Fiddler's Dream, Old Time Swing and Bluegrass Fiddling in 20th Century America. It's out from University of Missouri Press. Howard, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thank you, Darren. It's great to be here.
The topic is interesting because it talks about Missouri's role in developing a style of music that had a lot of not just popularity but cultural importance in the United States, especially kind of earlier in the 20th century. Talk a little bit about Missouri's role in what we now call old-time music or bluegrass music.
Sure. Well, part of the reason Missouri has been so important in traditional fiddle playing is just its historic, you know, location, you know, as the gateway state, the pass-through state, and particularly in early times, you know, if you were traveling west, you would go to St. Louis, you know, up the river and across another river perhaps, and so many different traditions came together in Missouri that, you know, this is part of the reason that it was such an important state, and a big piece of that, of course, were the African-American people coming first in slavery times, but that added significantly to Missouri's fiddle history. And of course, you know, early ragtime, you know, in Missouri is really
sure.
Big, Joplin and many other important players. And from early times, black people and white people, you know, played music together, going back to the French settlement south of St. Louis. So in really early first settlement times, people were mixing together in their traditions from, you know, cooking and how to make chairs and houses to music. So, you know, Missouri has just always been what people call a big fiddling state. There are more fiddlers per square acre here, you know, than most other states, maybe North Carolina, maybe Texas. But it's very important in the history of American fiddling because of things that came together here.
One of the things that obviously, given what I do, struck my interest that I wanted to ask you about was the role of radio stations and how this music was spread before television. And really, even we were talking before we came on here about people in my family that played, and it was how people kept themselves entertained before there was a radio. But radio would help spread them, and I think people that have kind of an understanding of the history of where country music came from know about the Louisiana Hayride and WSM and KVOO in Tulsa, where Bob Wills played. But Missouri, Kansas City stations, KWTO in Springfield, there was a really big part in this that I maybe wasn't quite as aware of.
Well, I do spend a lot of time in this book talking about radio because it is so important in the transference, you know, in the back and forth of music. But really, probably the most important station in some regards would be WOS in Jeff City, Watch Our State,
you know, yeah.
Which was really the first important station in Missouri and actually programmed what we now think of as hillbilly music or country music before the Grand Ole Opry. So it was in those very early years in the 20s. The great thing about WOS, of course, is that in the AM radio days before FM, if you had a high wattage station, that music was heard far, far
sure.
away. There are people that listened to live fiddle music over WOS in the 1920s all the way from Hawaii, Canada, and as far away as Cuba, which includes just about the whole continent.
Yeah.
And so you think, wow, what's the effect of that? Well, in the radio days, thinking of black musicians, there were a number of black fiddlers from here in central Missouri who played over the radio in the 1920s with white musicians. And listeners didn't know
right. They
were black. It's kind of an interesting subject for someone's dissertation. But we're playing tunes that were played by black fiddlers over the radio in the 1920s that were heard, you know, all over, you know, Seattle. You know, I hear people playing these tunes all over the country. And their grandfather might have been a fiddler, and he might have tuned in Friday night, you know, 1925, and heard Bill Caton or Bill Driver play a tune and liked it. And these tunes are still in circulation thanks to the beauties of radio.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting phenomenon that is kind of extends the whole story about early fiddle music, you know, when you get this new technology.
The book, again, is called Fiddler's Dream, Howard Marshall, our guest. And one of the great things about the book, in addition to it being some stories that are really fun and some history that's very interesting, is that it comes with a companion CD from Voyager Records, a sampler of about 30 tunes. And we're going to take a moment and hear just a bit of one of these, and I'm going to kind of let you play DJ here. And what if we were going to play one of the songs on here, do you think would be a good thing to kind of give an example of with these?
Well, there's so much to choose from, Darren.
Yeah, 30 songs on there.
It goes from what we now think of as old-time fiddling, you know, British Isles, hornpipes, and reels. It goes from that all the way through early jazz and swing music down to, you know, today's contest fiddling. So I might pick something from the radio days, speaking of the early times, and just, you know, track number one would be kind of fun because it's a transcription of a live radio broadcast in 1939 where probably the most best-known Missouri fiddler in those days, Lonnie Robertson from Springfield, is playing live over the radio, and they have a little hillbilly act, you know, it's two or three of them,
yeah.
And one guy kind of plays the rube, Uncle Enoch, you know, and the other guy is the fiddler, that's Etherham Hobbs, you know, and they make up names for themselves, and it's a nice early example of live radio and the excitement that people actually felt about early radio.
Well, we'll listen to just a little bit of that here.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Howdy, howdy to you, old lady, but then gentlemen, no matter where you're at, we're right here. This is your old Uncle Enoch Hudgens, and right here is Etherham Hobbs. Come in, Etherham.
Howdy, everybody. Hurry in there.
Yeah, that's Ether, that big loud talk.
Now, that is me.
Etherham got his fiddle here. My goodness, I'm trying to get on the air here, yeah. This old guitar.
Are we on air?
Yeah, on the very air, that's what there. Or what did you say?
I said, was we on the air?
Yeah, we're way up in there, up in the big building.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something.
What are we going to start out with?
We ain't going to start out at nothing.
Why?
Oh, so we'll get you rested if we start out here at anything. That man sitting right in there watching us.
Yeah, Bernard, I don't mean that. I mean start out a number on a program.
Oh, you're going to fiddle one first,
yeah.
Ain't you? Well, what's your name of it?
I do from the first number, old Frisky Dan.
Let's have it.
All right, a little bit of the CD that goes along with the book, Fiddler's Dream. Again, it's on University of Missouri Press, and Howard Marshall is our guest. As we talk about the development of this music here in the state, obviously we talked earlier about radio and its importance, but television would certainly play a role. And for a lot of people of a certain age, or people especially that have spent a lot of time at the Lake of the Ozarks like I have, the name Lee Mace is going to be very, very familiar. And Lee Mace's Ozark Opry, that was a big deal.
It really was, yeah. And like you say, in radio, and then their live Opry at the lake, and then they went into TV and, you know, played for years in the days of black and white TV. And it was one of those sort of minstrel shows that became what we now think of as Opry's, like the Grand Ole Opry. And so, you know, you might hear a whole range of music, you know, from traditional old-time, you know, square dance breakdowns to child ballads, you know, to heart songs and instrumentals and they would always include at least one gospel song.
It's funny you mention that, because the comparison I would make in the modern times, if people have ever spent any time at Branson, if you ever go to Presley's or Bald Knobbers or some of the shows at Silver Dollar City, you've got kind of a way of doing things, and you're going to have this type of music and this type of music, a lot of humor, usually poking fun, as you said, at hillbilly types, and a lot of silly, almost slapstick type humor. You always end with a gospel number. There's kind of a formula there, but it works.
Yeah, that our lives rotate by formula, don't they?
Sure.
And musical performance is very much like that. No matter what genre you're speaking of, each has its own formula worked out for a successful performance. So, the banjo player, gets the role that he had in the 1840s, the minstrel.
Yeah.
The banjo player is still the minstrel today. He's usually a guy dressed up in silly, hillbilly outfit and a stupid looking hat,
Right.
Yeah, corncob pipe and plow shoes and overalls. And oftentimes that's still the banjo player. So there's something about that, too, as a feature in this kind of vaudeville, that we think of as Opry music.
Sure. I want to ask you about, you mentioned square dancing, and there's a lot of information in the book about this, but talk about the connections between the traditional music we're talking about and other arts, especially dance.
Well, square dancing is an old kind of social dance, eventually from Europe. They say that square dancing may have originated in France in the 1700s and made its way over here, in quadrilles, they were called. And it just was a kind of social dancing that struck early people, settlers particularly, just right, because it was a kind of dance that you could meet strangers and socialize in a community with people you didn't know without getting too close. This is before, two steps and, country, bar music, but if you wanted to meet people, they were kind of mixers and excuses for people to get together on a Saturday night, listen to music, maybe dance, maybe have a cocktail or two and have a good time. So the social importance of square dancing was and still is important in some communities in Missouri.
Howard Marshall is our guest. The book, again, is called Fiddler's Dream, Old Time Swing and Bluegrass Fiddling in 20th Century America. It's out on University of Missouri Press. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Let's listen now to another song off of the CD, Howard. And one of the things that we're going to talk about in our next segment of the show is some of the really, really influential and marvelous fiddlers that came from this part of the state. So talk to me about maybe one of the tracks we'd like to play off of the CD featuring somebody from our neck of the woods here.
Sure. Well, right here, in Columbia, we had Luther Caldwell and his son Bobby Joe Caldwell, who were pioneers in swing music in the 1930s and 40s. They've both passed on now, but Bobby Joe Caldwell was one of those swing players who knew everybody. He traveled around a lot, but he was a very self-effacing man and never made commercial recordings. So all that we have of Bobby Joe is mostly home recordings from jam sessions. And we have a nice example of one of his swing tunes called Under the Silvery Moon, a big movie song that came out, 50 years ago. So, Bobby Joe Caldwell's a nice example of local fiddlers who aren't very well known to the wider fiddling community because he kept a narrow furrow in the field. He liked swing. He could play breakdowns and other things, but he really liked waltzes and foxtrots from the old big band days.
We'll hear Under the Silvery Moon. Thank you. All right, that was Under the Silvery Moon, Bobby Joe Caldwell, great fiddler from here in mid-Missouri. And the stories of some of these fiddlers are a big part of what makes the book an interesting read, preserving not just the big picture cultural influence of this music, although that's certainly a big part of it, but stories about some of these individual players, both from here in mid-Missouri and throughout the region. And that had to have been, I imagine, a very interesting part of the research that you do for this, because I'm sure in a lot of cases you were talking with younger relatives telling you stories about their grandfather or somebody else that was in their family that was a player.
That's right, Darren. Fiddlers seem to have an interesting position in early times. They're sort of the local celebrity. They are people who can be called on any time to come bring their fiddle, maybe to a church service if it's a Brush Arbor meeting and play some hymns, or play for a wedding, or play for a birthday party, but mostly play those Saturday night dances in the local tavern or schoolhouse cleared out. And sometimes these fiddlers have reputations far and wide that people only know through one or two references or recordings. A nice example of that is a fiddler from down in Reynolds County named Roy Wolliver, who was a big influence on John Hartford, our favorite son from St. Louis.
Yes.
Gentle on my mind, John Hartford.
Right.
But in his early days, John, as a teenager, wanted to play fiddle even before he did much banjo playing. And he was one of the first people to actually lug a tape recorder around in the 1950s and record old-time fiddlers. And this is before most other people were into that sort of thing. And he came across a man named Roy Wolliver, who was kind of a wild character and eccentric, didn't like to wear socks, had no permanent home, rambled through the woods, went from farm to farm. He would chop wood for a few days for somebody and maybe repair some fence and maybe do a little gardening, and then the next day he might just be gone without any word at all. And he'd walk 15, 20 miles to the next farmer he knew who would let him sleep in his barn or in his shed, and a kind of an itinerant fellow. And people tell stories today about Roy Wolliver from the 1930s and 40s. We're still telling those stories. He was kind of a scalawag. People couldn't trust him. He had light fingers.
Ah.
John Hartford used to tell the story of Roy Wolliver stealing an important farmer's watch and then disappearing the next day. And he was eventually caught, sent to the state prison in Jeff City, got out, went back, and stole the same watch again. That was Roy Wolliver, but apart from all of this, he was a brilliant fiddler. But he was very sensitive about people watching him because he was cross-eyed. He was very sensitive about this and had a violent streak. So his favorite place to play was in a tavern. Taverns were pretty wild in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Taverns today are nothing compared to the level of excitement in the 1940s, particularly all the wartime soldiers coming home and in the Depression when people were out of work and looking for anything. And many occasions Roy Wolliver would take offense at somebody looking at him wrong, and he always carried a big pocket knife, and he'd pull his knife out and chase people off and all sorts of things and get into fights. And he was just one of those characters. He wasn't the leading pillar of the community, but he was a great musician, and he played a lot of really interesting hornpipes, complicated tunes, fiddle tunes, dance tunes, in B flat and F, which there's a whole nother chapter about playing old time music in the flat keys. You'll appreciate mm-hmm. as a musician, because if we think of old time fiddling, it's in the square dance keys, D, G,
right.
The standard, what you call open keys, A, C. But another strong theme in Missouri is the appreciation of playing in B-flat and F, and Roy Wolliver was one of those. It played a number of really wicked, interesting tunes in the flat keys.
And it's more difficult, but it has a different sound, and it would be interesting if everything you always heard was in D or G, then it would definitely stand out.
Yeah, that's right. I go to jam sessions and play a lot of those tunes in F and and B flat, and one particular tune that every fiddler in the world plays is Fisher's Hornpipe.
Mm-hmm, sure.
In the early books, it's in D. Everybody plays it in D. It's assumed to be in D, but Missouri fiddlers of a certain stripe like it in F. And you play it in F, and it just lays out kind of in a totally different way. You know, it
yeah.
sounds like a totally different tune. So, you know, people like Roy Wooliver become important in the community. Kind of, they're in a way, they're a connection to the past, and they're an embodiment of the sort of the spirit of their community and of the age. People are still talking about Roy Wooliver. He's been dead since about 1955 or so.
Harold is our guest. Harold Marshall is our guest. The book, again, is called Fiddler's Dream. And one of the players that I have some familiarity with, people still tell stories about him in Boone County here. And I had the opportunity to get to see play one time, but a name that's going to be remembered as long as this style of music is played, I imagine, is Taylor McBain. Tell me a little Taylor McBain story.
Well, Taylor McBain was a marvelous person, and one of the first people to take me on, you know, as an apprentice back when I was getting into fiddling in the 1970s when I was here. And Taylor was an old-line Missouri family sort of person. You know, he was from the very first pioneers. There's, of course, a McBain village down on the river.
Yeah.
His folks kind of followed the early pattern that embodies a lot of Missouri history. Scotch-Irish people from Kentucky, from the central part of Kentucky, you know,
yes.
here in the Little Dixie area. The mountain people from Kentucky, more in the Ozarks. But Taylor was like the central Missouri pattern from the bluegrass part of Kentucky. And his family was musical, and he was a real character and had all kinds of wonderful sayings that kind of left you scratching your head. You know, one of his favorite expressions was, fiddling, that's my pan of berries. What a great expression. And he had a wonderful knack of teaching to a very sharing and very generous person.
Now that was the thing that I wanted to bring up and that I remember about him was an event that he did, and there were several fiddlers there, and he was so delighted. There was a girl, couldn't have been 10 or 12 years old, that played very well, and he spent a lot of time encouraging her and talking to her, and it seemed like, you know, first of all, it's just the decent guy thing to do is to be nice to younger people. But it was also, I think, important to him to see this music had a future.
Yeah, a lot of fiddlers are like that. But on the other side of the coin, a lot of fiddlers don't want to share their music. They feel like somebody's going to take it off and make money from it, or I don't know what, you know, from some strange idea about commercialism. But most fiddlers were like Taylor. They're delighted to have the interest of a young person because they know that this music lives best when it's transferred from person to person, you know, human beings, one-on-one.
Sure.
So whenever anybody expressed any interest at all, particularly young people, he embraced them and helped them as much as he could.
Which gets me to the final part of the discussion I wanted to ask you about, and that is the ways the book is about music in the 20th century, as the title says. But talk about ways in which this music is being preserved in the 21st century, because as I went online, kind of looking some things up before I had you in to visit with, I found several groups here in mid-Missouri that are dedicated to the preservation of this music, and that's really encouraging.
Yeah, that is. This sense of wanting to preserve it is kind of a 60s thing. You know, kind of goes back to that crazy decade,
yes.
good and bad and ugly, you know, the 1960s, when a lot of people turned away, you know, from mass media and what the book said to do and wanted to do it themselves and learn it from older people with knowledge. And that kind of trickled on into today. But to me, the huge difference now is the way media works. With digital media, you no longer have to go meet Roy Wooliver or know John Hartford and ask him to send you a cassette copy of his.
Right.
You know, you just punch it up on the internet, and there it is, Roy Wooliver. You can see John Hartford playing Roy Wooliver's fiddle tunes on YouTube anytime you type in, you know, John Hartford fiddle - Roy Wooliver.
Right.
And so this has a lot of permutations. It of course helps keep the music alive, But in a sense, there are losses in this process. You know, there are losses of the personal one-on-one web of music that makes it somehow interesting to a lot of people to learn it. Of course, I'm an old guy. You know, I'm 73, so I go back to the dinosaur age when you had to know somebody to learn this music.
Or sure.
Or know the right record shop in the city to buy the right LP. But it takes something away from it when you can, you know, there are Missouri tunes now that you could find on InterTube played in, you know, Canada, Japan, you know, anywhere.
Right.
You know, by people who don't even know how to spell Missouri. Is that good or is that, I guess it's good in the long run because it keeps the music going. But the context of the living people who the music came from is in danger of being lost. So that's why people like us like books and you know, documentary projects, because it documents people who would not be documented otherwise. And at least people who read books sure. might come across and say, wait a minute, Roy Wolliver, he lived in Missouri? I didn't know that.
How about that? There are still opportunities for people to see the real McCoy, and we can't see Taylor McBain, but we might see fiddlers who learned from him. There's get-togethers at the Boone County Historical Museum from time to time. They do a square dancing deal up in Hallsville, I think, once a month, so there's still some stuff like that going on.
Yeah, there are lots of opportunities, and of course, festivals are still very big. That's another thing that sprouted in the 60s was folk festivals.
Right.
And bluegrass festivals, particularly with bluegrass music. Without bluegrass festivals, it probably would have fizzled out. But the festival rage, you know, is still going in bluegrass. And if you want to hear live fiddling, you know, go to the bluegrass festival this weekend up at near Mexico, I guess, mm-hmm. east of Mexico, the Curryville, the Back 40 Bluegrass Festival is next weekend, Labor Day weekend. So there'd be, you know, scores of fiddlers there. They may be playing in bluegrass bands and playing bluegrass fiddle, but in back in the campsite, they'll probably, you know, remember, hey, let's play that tune that Taylor McBain used to play.
Well, again, the book is called Fiddler's Dream, Old Time Swing and Bluegrass Fiddling in 20th Century America. It's available through University of Missouri Press. And as I always say when we get one of their authors in here, awfully glad that University of Missouri Press is still around. We weren't sure about that a couple of years ago, but they're still doing some wonderful stuff, and we appreciate them very much. Howard, it's been a great joy to talk to you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Darren. Appreciate it.
And that is our program for this evening. Thanks to Howard Marshall, our guest, and the University of Missouri Press for being here on the program. Remember, you can hear past episodes in our Thinking Out Loud series at our website, kbia.org. Also, if you didn't get a chance last week, we talked a little bit with our recently retired colleague, Pat Akers, and that's a fun conversation. You can also find that on our website. Just go to kbia.org, click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. We'll be back next week with another Thinking Out Loud. Till then, for our associate producer, Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.